What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
We begin this Monday's Palestine coverage with headlines with Curry Peterson-Smith, Michael Ratner Middle East Fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, where he researches U.S. empire borders and migration. Good morning, Curry.
Good morning, Kat.
Thank you for joining us again. We haven't started this way in a minute, but I'm going to because it was in headlines. 37,300 people murdered is the most recent total, and we are almost 9 months in with no seeming end in sight. Your reflections as someone who is mired in this work and what is happening right now?
You know, Kat, I've been really grateful to join you on so many of these Mondays, and I'm just really looking forward to not having these conversations with you. Like, that is for us to spend Mondays not talking about a genocide, but instead about Palestine getting free. So, but I can't say enough about what it means that you continue to call attention to this genocide. It's so important because it really does have different phases. As somebody who, I know that all your listeners are really feeling this, you know, what's happening in Gaza. As somebody whose work involves following very closely, I have to say, it feels like just about each week is different from the previous week, and it kind of sinks into a new depth. And so it's important to actually continue to engage with what is happening. And it's also a marker, it's a record of the fact that it keeps happening, that you continue to have these conversations. So gratitude to you. This is an extremely important conversation, and I am also looking forward to talking with you about things besides the genocide in the future, hopefully near future.
Hopefully the near future. I mean, we have talked about other things, but to your point, it's been really important to me to have these Monday conversations. I think, you know, I run another organization, and my role in that org has shifted, right? So the team is in the streets more than I am as the ED, and I have to, like, fundraise so they can be in the streets. And so this has felt like the thing I can do, you know, is not allow people to stop talking about it and getting the proper message out as opposed to the trash on CNN and MSNBC. So,
yeah.
Let's dissect some of the headlines from this morning. So several countries have unilaterally recognized Palestine as its own state. Israel's response is that it is looking to, quote unquote, strengthen Jewish settlements in the occupied West Bank. What do you think that means, and your thoughts about that response?
Well, one, just on the recognition. So on one hand, I think that it is a response on the part of, you know, dozens of states, but increasingly kind of powerful states and states that have been states that are more central to kind of world power, the way power is administered on the world stage. You know, it's significant when a country like Norway, or Spain, you know, does that recognition. And it's I do think that it's an expression of how repulsed a lot of the so-called international community is with this genocide. And at the same time, I mean, we can appreciate that, but I really take the lead of Nora Ericott, you know, scholar Nora Ericott, Bay Area native, who has said, we don't need, I mean, this isn't the time for recognition of Palestinian state. This is a time for arms embargoes. This is a time for isolating Israel to actually stop this genocide. So I think that critique is extremely important. What it, the Israeli response of even more aggressively settling Palestinian land, you know, I mean, there's something so contemptuous about it right now, but it is really a continuation of the whole project. I mean, this is what has made a Palestinian state impossible. And the, you know, the Oslo Accords, I mean, since 1993, you know, the Oslo Accords and the kind of pursuit of this vision of a Palestinian state, the period following that was the time of the most aggressive Israeli settlement, particularly in the West Bank, precisely to make impossible a Palestinian state. And so that's what they're doing. They're doing what creating what Ariel Sharon called facts on the ground. That is, whatever the conversation is at the UN, we're going to keep colonizing the land.
Two threads I want to pull on there, Curry. One, I'm looking for the story that that I want you to respond to. But one of the things that I think about and have been thinking about since, you know, Ireland and some of these other countries said Spain said that they were going to recognize Palestine as a state, that happened at the same time the flotilla was trying to take off from Istanbul to get much needed humanitarian aid, and now I can't remember the country, I think it was New Guinea, pulled their flag so they can't sail. So like a very real thing these countries could do if they were like serious about this, right, is give them their flag is one of
That's
the
right.
things that I've been sitting with. Yes.
That's right. Absolutely. I mean, there's any number of things that any number of things that other countries could do to actually really disrupt this genocide. And yeah, it's, I mean, at the very best, there are severe limitations to the idea of kind of that the solution is inviting Palestine to join the community of states. I mean, like I know, like there, I don't want to be totally dismissive of that idea. There's obviously, not obviously, but there is a wide and varied conversation among Palestinians about, you know, their visions for liberation, and you know, there has been the pursuit of a Palestinian state. So I don't want to dismiss the whole thing, but given what is happening, given that Israel's carrying out a genocide, and that genocide really depends on a level of at least acceptance and at most great complicity on the part of, you know, again, the so-called international community. There are very different and much more disruptive things that states can be doing. I mean, Malaysia said, look, we're not going to let Israeli ships dock here. Like, that's over, you know? I don't know of other states that have done that. Turkey has cut off trade with Israel. That's important. You know, there have been states that have said, like the Netherlands and like Japan, that have intervened to say that arms manufacturers in those countries have to stop shipping weapons to Israel. You know, things like that, I think, are much more significant than kind of recognize Palestine as a state. Although, you know, that with that recognition comes more of a voice at the UN and in other contexts that will be important and part of the equation. I just think that there are much more and much different things that states could be doing to interrupt this urgent, you know, this genocidal violence.
Agreed. And sticking one more thread I want to tug on from your previous response, and that's a headline about Germany this morning. And that is that Germany dismisses undersecretary who ordered investigation into academics for pro-Palestinian support. The education and research minister said the investigation was an affront to, that's my word, not hers, but that's basically what she meant, to academic freedom. And I was like, huh. That's a little bit of a different tone and tenor than we've heard from institutions in Germany to date.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, it's a reminder. I mean, look, like the behavior first and foremost of the U.S. and German states has been absolutely horrendous and just deeply complicit with this genocidal Israeli violence. But again, like there's an incredible level of complicity and I mean, I just think about like the mass protests across Europe, you know, against the various complicities of these different states and the police repression in country after country, right? Like, but that is whatever. I mean, you know, Macron in France will say, "Oh, we need a ceasefire," and then he'll send the French police to crush these protests, and that have essentially been ruled illegal at different points. Right. So, you know, on one hand, these states' behavior is horrendous. On the other hand, this is a contested situation. You know what I mean? And I think that this news out of Germany speaks to that contestation. It speaks to the relentlessness and the kind of international nature of this movement that is on the streets all around the world for Gaza, and it's a force to be reckoned with, even in the states that are most complicit in the genocide.
Moving on, and this is something you and I have talked about a few times in different ways over the last several months. But this headline out of Wall Street Journal: Gen Z Palestinians see doors slamming shut on coexistence with Israel. Young Palestinians scarred by conflict are losing faith in prospects for peace. And there's a quote: "I have lived through things no one ever should." Mm. And that's something we've talked about, Curry, right? Like, it's been horrific, right, since the Nakba, and as I've learned, since before the Nakba, right, all of the preparation that went into creating the Zionist state. But this last 9 months, like, I just don't know what the conversation at the table is. I mean, I know that there are people that are, you know, in power that are having conversations in Egypt, but I don't know. And what I think about, Curry, is Black folks in this country, and all that we have had to suppress and push down and ignore and look away from in order just to function in this country, given our history here, mm-hmm. and the brutality of it and the ongoing trauma that compounds it, right? And how that has damaged us. Like, that's how I talk about intercommunal violence. That's how I talk about the high rates of mental health in our community, right? Because the trauma has to come out some way. Anyway, let me get off my box. That headline, though, I feel it. Like, I don't know what that looks like.
Ooh, no, I really appreciate everything you're saying, Kat. You know, and it reminds me of this. Just thinking about how Palestinians and young Palestinians in particular, in this case, are navigating this reality that they've been forced into. And it reminds me of this headline that I actually listened. I did something that I don't usually do this morning, which is listen to Ezra Klein's show on New York Times podcast. It's kind of interesting because he came back. He was just on this trip, you know, to, you know, the 48, you know, to Israel and to the West Bank. And he was like, "Look, I'm processing a lot, but the one thing that comes across so clearly is like, he's like, there is no Israeli left. There is no Israeli liberalism. Like, he's like, it is just, it's all right. He's like, the whole population, like, all there is the right and the far right. You know what I mean? Right. And that was a really interesting insight. It's actually the New York Times, which is very invested in this notion of a kind of Israeli democracy that does have some space for, you know, a diminished Palestinian rights. The Times has been freaking out because the evidence is there is no such space. You know what I mean? Like, even for the kind of diminished second class citizenship in quotes, you know, that has been sort of considered within Israeli politics, that is over. And so I think about that statement that you read, and I've just been thinking about this so much that like, we're in a new, this is a new time, it's a new world, and we're already here, and there are so many features of it. I mean, that that Israel sort of imposing on this new world that you and I have talked about. I mean, it's a world where there's no such thing as civilianhood at all. All people in Gaza are fair targets, you know, because they elected Hamas and you know, and therefore they're all, you know, they're all right. So you know, we can talk about civilianhood, and that's a problematic concept, but there are certain protections that we have come to expect in the world order, that hospitals and schools and houses of worship are sanctuary spaces that are off limits. And in this world that we are now in, Israel is fighting to shape that world in a way such that there is no place that is safe. If we decide that a hospital, that there's a threat in a hospital, and we offer no evidence, trust us, you know, we have the evidence, you don't need to see it, that is a site for, you know, to be bombed or invaded. And so I just think that is what Israel, that's the way that they are shaping this new world. And the question I think for people like us is, what are we doing to shape this new world? Like, what are the features that we want this new world to have? And I so appreciate you always coming back to the Black freedom struggle, the Black radical tradition, you know, the fullness of our struggle here and all of its political content, you know, and drawing upon that deep wellspring as we think about a new world that we are in, that on one hand is horrific, and on the other hand, because it is a world in formation, that means that it is a world that means that there's real possibility. And so we've got a responsibility in that possibility to think about what we're bringing in to shape it.
Yeah, and I'll just say for the record here, and you can respond or not respond, but, you know, in the same way that I expect and demand that when we're talking about Black freedom struggles, that people follow Black leadership, right? I follow Palestinian leadership. It's not for me to say what should happen. And the leadership that I follow, right, that I bring on this show, that I rock with when I'm in the street, right, it's not even about a compromise anymore, right? It's no more Zionist project at all, free Palestine, end of sentence, period, point blank. And, like, that is what people are in the streets for. And that sort of unapologetic demand or unapologetic assertion of humanity and right to return and rights to their land is super inspiring. And, like, you know, I've said for a long time, we ain't going to sing our way to liberation. There's some realities, right, that people don't want to talk about when we talk about what it's really going to take to overthrow empire. And I feel like that's the conversation that our Palestinian relatives are having right now. And it is our duty and our job to follow their lead, right? And yes, lend expertise or history in terms of Black radical tradition of organizing when asked. And I think that they're leading the globe, right? This moment is leading the globe into a new era of resistance, unlike anything we've seen, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I resonate with all that and agree with all that. And I will say, I will just disclose, you know what I mean, as somebody who shares a position as you, you know, Black American located in the heart of you know, the U.S. empire, working simultaneously for Black freedom and for the freedom of everybody, because those things are bound up with each other, right? And at the same time, those different freedoms and freedom struggles have their own contours. And it's actually complicated, I think, to navigate that position, right? And yeah, as Palestinian comrades and friends have reminded me, they're like, look, yo, what happens in like the precise trajectory, that's not for you to that's not for you to talk about, my friend. You know what I mean? Like, that's for us to figure out. Your job, and this is what my friends in Palestine remind me, they're like, what are you doing to stop your government from sending the weapons to this colonial power? That's your job. You know, you're there. And as people located here, we've got to confront this monster that is supporting that kind of violence. And what's tricky is that, you know, it is a world that we are all creating together. And we are in dialogue with each other, you know, we struggle in convergence with each other, and yet those struggles play out differently in different places. And so I think really, really locating our precise kind of role in all of this and our position in all of this, that's what we have to do. And it's challenging, but it is so, so important, especially right now.
Curry, you actually, I'm gonna go here. I got two more questions for you, and then I'm gonna let you go. Ongoing attacks on Rafah, ongoing, and wondering what updates you have on the conditions in the refugee camps, including the ones that Egypt, set up.
Right, I mean, you know, it's horrific, and I'll say two things. One, quick. I mean, Egypt is not a friend to the people, you know, to the Palestinians, and certainly that is showing now. You know, Egypt does not want the quote unquote Palestinian problem. They don't want Palestinian refugees across their border, and they are doing what they can, as they have for many decades, including being part of the Israeli blockade over these 16 years. They're doing what they can to, quote unquote, contain Palestinians. And then, you know, it just has to be said, like, they're bombing Rafah every day, basically. And Biden said many weeks ago, I have a red line. It's the invasion of Rafah. Right. And it's evident that line is not red. You know what I mean? Like, it's really...
It's been very much green for many weeks.
Exactly. And this is, you know, Israel is... It's really it's testing, you know, what can it get away with, and the evidence is that according to the White House, it can get away with a lot. So again, it's really urgent that our movement is the one that that demands an end to this, because the White House clearly has no interest in doing so.
And that's a segue to, I think, what is the last question I ask you every time we talk? Like, unmovable. I'm an organizer, right? I believe that the streets is where we get the change. The streets is where the power is, right? The streets is where we force them to concede. No movement. We are, what is it? It's June, so July, October. 3 months away from the election. No movement. Curry Peterson Smith, what is so important in terms of our staying connected to Israel that this man is throwing away his political career? Because clearly he doesn't care about 37,000 dead Palestinians.
Right.
Clearly, that his moral compass does not point in that direction. But he didn't have self-preservation?
Right.
What is happening?
Right. You know, I think of it this way. I mean, I really do. You know, what you just said a minute ago about how Palestinians and the Palestinian freedom struggle is leading the globe in terms of a freer world, like, that's what the Palestinian freedom struggle represents to people like us who want to see a freer world. And I do believe that what Israeli colonization represents for people like Biden is maintaining the world as it is. And that's the level of investment. And so I'll conclude with, I just always think about that horrific quote from Secretary of State Madeleine Albright when asked about the number of Iraqi children killed by U.S.-led sanctions on Iraq. You know, she was interviewed in 60 Minutes by Leslie Stahl, who said, the evidence is that these sanctions have killed more Iraqi children than people were killed in Hiroshima from the U.S. atomic bombing. Do you think it's worth it? And Madeleine Albright replied, yeah, we think the price is worth it. And so people in Washington who carry out these policies, they're not unaware of the, like, human toll. They simply, on the balance sheet, you know, the deeply racist and dehumanizing balance sheet of maintaining a world order that they think benefits them, they think the price is worth it. And that means that we have to up the political price And the economic price, we have to figure out ways to disrupt the various systems nonviolently, you know, in this country that enable this kind of genocidal violence, and make it so that the political price, we have to make this too expensive for them so that they can't afford it.
Right. And a reminder to my listeners that the Mask Off Mars campaign kicked off last week. Big transporter of weapons to Israel. And thank you for that qualifier in terms of how we're going to get there, Curry, because, you know, they be listening. They be listening to me and waiting for the moment to be like, go get her.
I got you. I got you back. We got each other.
Yes, we do. All right, Brother Curry, I'm going to let you go, get on with your busy day, and I will talk to you very soon. Thank you so much for your insight this morning.
So much gratitude, Kat. Take care. Peace.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA, that's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.